Good morning. It's 8:06. You are listening to KBOO in Portland. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Lynn, and I'm here with Ani.
Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And we have in-studio guests this morning. It's very exciting. And, of course, that was, I think, the first time the Beatles has ever been the intro music for one of the first for Paz Rev.
It's true for me.
Well, we're talking about real wealth today, so it was called You Never Give Me Your Money.
You are such the good song picker, Lynn.
I have to say.
Good morning, everyone. You are listening to your very own community radio station. This is KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. And we are delighted this morning to have with us a couple of folks who are connected with Real Wealth Portland. Real Wealth Portland has been around now for a number of years, doing great work in how I've always thought of Real Wealth is grounding the theory of an economy that works for the health and good of community into action, taking on projects, taking on really moving forward in creating a world that is a better, more humane, and fair place for us to interact in. That's how I think of you. So I'm thrilled that you have some time to join us this morning, Marcia Myers and Jared Gardner. Let's go ahead and start there. Marcia, you have been involved with Real Wealth Portland since the beginning. Marcia is a teacher, a mother, an activist, and spending some time with us this morning. We're pleased to have you.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much.
And actually, everyone else knows that too. That's good.
I spoke with Ani, I don't know, it was probably in November, about being on, and this Real Wealth, which started 5 years ago, about 5 years ago, we started the Real Wealth of Portland, and we based it on Rian Eisler's work, The Real Wealth of Nations, Creating Caring Economics. And the premise here is that our real wealth, of course, are relationships with each other and with our resources. Money is a tool, but it's not our real wealth. The real wealth are our interactions in a healthy, thriving way, a resilient and sustainable way with each other, healthy relationships, and healthy with the planet's resources. The thing that's exciting is, or many of the things are exciting, but when I talked with Ani originally, she was saying, you know, I'm wondering how we can tie this in, or I see that we can tie this in with the Occupy movement. And actually, the Occupy movement is doing exactly what we've been doing for the last 5 years, which is creating a safe space for people to share the wealth of resources that we have. And that is what, if anyone actually attended or watched on TV the different Occupy spaces, that is what was going on there. Sharing, people having a safe place where they could lead themselves. This was leaderless because it's about actualizing everyone. We are moving from a power and control empire system to a hierarchy, but it's a hierarchy of actualization. We use our gifts to actualize each other. So the Real Wealth of Portland, we have been doing this for 5 years, and it's been just amazing. We have two projects going on now that are national projects, and I have to say we've had a lot to do with getting these moving. One is Rethinking Psychiatry, and the other one is the banking campaign, the whole Occupy Your Bank, mm-hmm. because your bank is used, you know, of course, occupying the tool of money. So those are our two campaigns right now, and they're off and running as we have been. So that's what we're doing, and it's wonderful to be here and share it because this is a place where KBOO's been doing this for years, giving us a safe place to interact and share our relationships.
We like to think so.
So let's look at the work of Rian Eisler. If there are people who are listening who don't know Rian Eisler, she's a completely inspirational author in my life. Her initial work was The Chalice and the Blade, more than 20 years ago now, which looks at some archaeological site in Catalhayoc that looks at the partnership paradigm. and how prior to what has become Western culture, dominator culture, people lived in partnership, that they recognized that the wealth of community was more functional, that when wealth was shared, when relationships were on an egalitarian basis, they emphasized arts and sort of what I would think of as more high culture, arts, music, passion, pleasure, over martialism, over competitiveness, over the hoarding of resources and the concentration of wealth into strong man, leader-oriented culture and community, which is, of course, what eventually came to dominate the scene, starting in the Fertile Crescent, call it 10,000 years ago, give or take, where things really started going wrong. So, in looking at her work over the years, and how she has actually now, she is involved in the Partnership Institute, looking at, again, grounding this work into actually making our world more partnership-based, going back to those values, and seeing how we can rearrange and the economy, how we deal with our resources, what we value, and making sure that what we say we value and what we act as if we value are actually in concert. Because in this society, they're not. It's very, very fractured. And in Rianne's work of The Real Wealth of Nations, the passage that has always stuck in my head, okay, there's a few, but where I'd love to sort of start out this morning is her looking at how we show what we value. We say we value children, right? We say we want the next generation to be, you know, loved and included and educated and nurtured, and we pay child care workers minimum wage or slightly above. We pay teachers a pittance, considering the work that they do and the importance of bringing our next generation in and providing them that strong basis. And then we look at how we pay plumbers. Now, most people are going to say they value their children more than they value their plumbing. But we pay plumbers over $60, $70 an hour. They're considered professionals, specialized skills, as opposed to, well, they deal with kids. Right. And so we see a very stark example of how we are in conflict with ourselves between what we say our values are, what our hearts feel like our values are, and how we deal with this tool called money. So in trying to make that concept more visible, that is one of the values I really take from the work of Real Wealth Portland and Rianne's work in general.
So. And that sort of leads me into one of our projects, which is, as I mentioned before, Rethinking Psychiatry, which is just about a year old now. And I've actually been on some KBOO programs as Robert Whitaker, who wrote the book Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullet, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Amazing Rise of Mental Illness in America. And actually what morally pulled Bob Whitaker into this, and myself as a teacher of 30 years, is this pharmaceutical story that we have been told and programmed with, actually, through TV and every other way, that we can make ourselves better by chemically altering our brains. And the part that is totally unacceptable, and as I said, has drawn both Robert Whitaker and myself into this as a probably lifelong campaign, is the drugging of children, which is growing. And as a teacher who's been retired now, I like to think that it was becoming less, but it's actually becoming more. And that is saying, labeling children at a very early age, now as early as 2, and saying that they have ADD, that was the big one, that's the starter, but now they can also be schizophrenic, bipolar, all these things that did not even exist 30 years ago. Now we're labeling children, and as soon as you put a label on a child, the pharmaceuticals are right there with something that can alter their brain so that, well, really what it does is sedate them. So these are concepts that are totally, if you believe in the real wealth and you believe in relationships, of course, our children, the most vulnerable, and our elderly are the ones that are our, canaries to show how we really value human life. So canaries in the coal mine I was alluding
right,
to there.
Absolutely.
So this this part is just really the most unacceptable. But there's a lot of the whole pharmaceutical psychiatric story of having a broken brain if you're not following this very, it's getting smaller and smaller is what is sane and what is acceptable or normal. So rethinking psychiatry, and I'm going to say it now so I don't forget, the things that both Jared and I say today are on our Real Wealth of Portland website. So you can go to the Real Wealth of Portland website. We also have rethinkingpsychiatry.org that gives you so much information about what's going on. And it's not just here in Portland, but I have to say, as so many other things, we are really out there as far as waking up and saying no. So this is occupying our mental health. It's occupying the mental, emotional, and spiritual health of children. I also want to say, so I don't forget, the Real Wealth of Portland is a project of the Economic Justice Action Group of the First Unitarian Church. The First Unitarian Church, which is down on 12th between Main and Salmon in downtown Portland, has been an incredible incubator for all of these things that are going on. It provides that space I was talking about, the safe space for us to bring our ideas. And so, and economic justice, this is all about economic justice because the majority of the stories that we're living by have been written by the people who are interested in economics as money. So the psychiatric story for psychiatrists and pharmaceuticals is about selling a story that tells us something's wrong with us and we can be better if we take something that's going to cost money. So that's how we got into it. And it's really an exciting movement, but it's also very painful. And I want to say also that they say the majority of us now are taking some kind of mind-altering drug, because this is a hard society to live in. People who are taking prescription medications, this is not to say they to quit taking them or they're wrong, but you take them with your choice, being educated. Please go to our website again, rethinkingpsychiatry.org, and there's so much material there to help you educate yourself. And then any child who is medicated is force medicated. It's force medication because those children do not have a say. And Bob Whitaker, if you haven't read his book, look at it, and he can't find anyone to debate him. There is no scientific evidence to show that in the long run, these things they do to children, the chemicals they give them, are anything but they shorten their lives. The only thing they know for sure is if you put children on drugs early, just like if Joe the Camel got you smoking early, you would be a consumer the rest of your life. So getting children on drugs is wonderful for the pharmaceutical industry. They know pretty, and children grow from ADD. Now the big thing is, I know I'm really going on here, but I'm so passionate.
You're on a roll. Keep going, Marcia.
It's so terrible. Just this one last thing. This whole thing about being bipolar, that means fluctuating. That used to be something that was and Bob Whitaker, again, mm-hmm. tell us about the statistics. It wasn't common at all. Now, a lot of kids, when they get in their teens and early 20s, when they have been subjected, now they could be drugs that they've taken themselves, street drugs, but the kids that have been put on these, one of the things is they're becoming bipolar. Duh. This, right. Their brains have been screwed around with. And so then now they have medication, of course, for bipolar. So I just want you to know, Rethinking Psychiatry and Real Wealth of Portland, we're helping to wake people up to this story that is all about money and not about people.
Well, and also in schools, and thank you, Marcia.
Awesome, Marcia.
That's my mother, right. My grandmother, and my teacher all speaking.
Well, and also in schools, teachers are expected at this particular point, because they're being so defunded, to have these enormous classes. So anyone with any sort of a problem, and they're bored, kids are probably bored and squirming like crazy. I know a lot of teachers. You're a teacher. And what are you supposed to do? Oh, well, drug them. That's
the
easy way.
And I have to say, I know I'm a fascinating person, I say that, but for children to have to sit there and listen to me for 5.5 hours in a room with no windows.
Yes,
the
right.
Majority of time I taught in rooms with no windows. This is 10, 11, 12-year-olds.
See, it's crazy.
This is immoral.
Right. And really, when we look at what's happened with our school system, I agree it's immoral. And as I've noticed, the correlation between kids getting drugged like mad, epidemically drugged, let's look at what we've done with our school systems lately with the tax structures. We don't have corporate taxes anymore. You know, we got to make ourselves competitive, and we can't charge those businesses anything to actually operate. But our kids, they don't need PE. They don't need to run around and get physically active.
No music or art.
We don't need music or art. We can't actually deal with kids learning rhythm and actually using their body and their whole brains. We're going to sit them in that chair, and they're going to sit there, and they're going to be very still. And they're going to listen to you because you are the most fascinating woman ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't need windows. Windows, that's going to cause them to daydream, for God's sake.
It distracts
them. You know, and so and what's the answer? Take a pill, right? So I can't agree with you more. and I'm so glad you're here this morning.
And this is foundational, as is the banking. I guess.
And we'll get to the banking in just a moment. I want to remind people that this is a chat show. Please call in with your questions, your comments. If you, too, have no rant control this morning, this is No Rant Control Radio. So please do give us a call, 503-231-8187. I'm Ani Lynn, my co-host here. We have Marcia Myers, and we have Jared Gardner with Real Wealth Portland. We've been listening to Marcia talking about one of the projects of Real Wealth, Rethinking Psychiatry. And Jared, you are here to primarily give voice to that other project of Real Wealth, and that is looking at how we operate with banks. You are with Oregon's, oh my goodness, here it is, Oregon Banks Local?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Suddenly my notes, my eyes, I don't track anymore. And thank you for being here. You want to tell us how the banks tie into this and what this project is in helping to raise awareness and actually, again, do concrete things to help us shift from the crazy, non-serving anyone economy that we have to something that is sustainable and humane.
First, thanks for having us on, and this has been great to work with Real Wealth of Portland for a few years now. Back in 2009, we started a Move Your Money campaign. We called it Fire Your Bank, and then added a variation of Put Your Money Where Your Mouth Is, started looking at local financial institutions, ranking them to see how they keep money in our communities or whether they extract out of that. And over the last few years, it's evolved into the coalition Oregon Banks Local. And we have a website, oregonbankslocal.org, that looks at every institution, every financial institution in the state, and ranks them on a number of criteria to help people make informed decisions. Right now, the story seems to be bigger is better in the in many areas of our lives, and you see policy follow that. So we have banks getting bigger and bigger, and in fact, in Oregon, 66% of bank deposits are held by 5 banks. It's a lot of our.
And did you find they were putting things? These banks were putting things back into the local economy at all?
No, absolutely not. In many ways, that is the sound that we hear. I've traveled a lot around the state, doing this education and research, and we see in small towns that are often not even a decision maker in the big banks. So if you want a loan, if you're a business, they will refer you to somebody hundreds of miles away, if you're lucky, or thousands of miles away, Minneapolis, Charlotte, New York. So we wanted to give some context to where to one, where to move money from, mm-hmm. And also where to move money to. And
let's look at where there was a huge movement, again, as Occupy started. That particular action got a real boost in the arm, mm-hmm. as banks were a very early target of Occupy. And there was a effort to raise awareness by many people about moving your money, something, again, that you had done a couple of years back. So that got a big boost in the arm, as I like to look at it. And folks are looking into local options, local banks, credit unions, and people sort of wondering what the differences were. What's the difference between the community bank, the local bank that just seems to be in this state, that might not have the name community bank, but is that better than the national, you know, Wells Fargo, whatever, Chase? Or is that sort of the same, but smaller now, but they're going to get, you know, big someday, you know, or credit unions? Are credit unions the only way? And there's not so much understanding about the differences between. So if you could explain that, maybe.
Yeah. Functionally, the difference between big banks and small banks, just on size, you're going to get more lending for small business. And so one of the areas we looked at for all institutions was small business lending. And across the board, the community banks that were more rooted here had the majority of their branches here that were locally owned, and decision makers were local, lent higher rates of their money to small business, and that includes family farmers. Mm-hmm. Credit unions, unfortunately, are capped federally in terms of how much they can do for business loans. So,
What's the cap?
It's based on their asset size, and it's only 12.5%. So, meaning that they can only do a very small portion of their lending in business, which means that it's often hard to hire somebody who has that experience. And business lending is very different than, say, home equity lending or auto lending or some of the other consumer stuff. So, credit unions have kind of been shoved over into that camp. Mm-hmm. They're obviously trying to work to change that, but right now the local community banks are the ones that are doing the lion's share in aggregate. If you measure all of the lending, they're still doing more than the big banks for small business lending. So that's an important distinction between the two. Both are good, both are needed. And our hope is that the community banks and credit unions see themselves on the same side, mm-hmm. against the large institutions that are extracting wealth from our communities.
Can you go ahead and name names on what local banks are? I think maybe some listeners aren't so. It's like, well, they're banks. What are some local banks that keep the money in the local economy?
I think that's important because we heard a lot of rhetoric of banks are bad, credit unions are good, and there is a nuance there. You know, just kind of off the top of my head, Capital Pacific Bank in Portland here, Northwest Bank. There's some banks in Lake Oswego. Columbia Community Bank on the outer edges towards the east. You've got M Bank. Albina Community Bank is one that people know a lot about. One Pacific Coast Bank has recently taken over Shore Bank, a good bank out of California, owned by a foundation. So the profits go back into the community. I'm missing a few.
How's On Point?
On Point's credit union.
Oh, okay.
They're one of the
banks.
They're one of the
what
biggest
about
ones.
Yeah. Banner Bank. What
Banner Bank out of Eastern Washington.
Yeah.
They do great agricultural lending. They're kind of I would call them a regional bank.
Well, they're just starting to be here, I think. There's like one in the Pearl.
There are a few. Yeah.
I was just curious.
And
well, I had you here to talk about it.
You've had a promo campaign. So
I know.
Now
I'm
you
just
check
curious.
It
it's
out.
A personal thing for me. Thank
and,
you.
And is this on?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I just wanted to have you say again the website where they can go so people can research this, because people are really looking for these things now. And thank grace, we did start this work. And I have to say, Jared is going nationally now. I mean, he's gone back to D.C. for the work we're doing here in Portland, which is often the case, is a model for other places in the United States. So he's not just doing this on his own, as I am not doing the Rethinking Psychiatry. We are working nationally with other people who are working on the same issues. So that's very uplifting. Mm-hmm. So, and then, are you going to talk about state banks?
Let's talk about some state banks, Jared.
However, we do have people waiting on the line.
Let's actually invite them into the conversation.
Yeah,
first.
We'll do that, and then we'll get back to state banks. Mitch, I believe, is on the line.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi,
good
thanks morning. For calling. What do you have to say?
Well, I'm trying to figure out what it is you're talking about, this elusive thing. What did you call it? Money? It's like, how can you move it when you don't got it? We're in a state of hurt here as a nation. The banks are a big fault of that. And mm-hmm. It's good to see the awareness waking up. But I would like people to move, rather than just that so-called money, to move their consciousness and the awareness. And thank goodness we're in a mild time right now when a lot of the country's in deep freeze and the world's in, you know, a bunch of hurt. We get these, what do they call it, killer whales down in Southern California, and now those humpbacks that are going through the islands of Hawaii. And they're blaming all this, what is it, climate change?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard anyone really say anything or touch on, maybe it's out of context, but HAARP. Has everyone forgotten that HAARP exists?
Oh, no, I have not forgotten that HAARP exists, but you're right. That's a little out of context for this show. I do, however, think that, you know, all struggle is the same struggle. And so when we are looking at the fact that, yeah, we are in a world of hurt, that people don't have many of the resources they feel they need to make a good life for themselves and their families.
Most people aren't even informed that they mm-hmm. are being drugged and sure. dumbed down deliberately. Are you aware, are you familiar with Charlotte Iserby or any of her work?
I am not.
She wrote a book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. Now, she was in charge of the education under Reagan, I believe it was. And it's fascinating. She's going to be interviewed today on the Alex Jones program. And I suggest you listen, and any of your audience that is interested in getting back control of their own mind and thought, to give her a listen.
All right.
Well, thanks. Well, thanks for your call, Mitch.
Thank you.
I think it is, again, really important to dig deep and to look at how we can raise awareness for ourselves and for our neighbors, our communities.
About that too. I believe Marcia started that with that.
Well, indeed. And so that is, again, it's the crux of the biscuit for Real Wealth Portland, to really raise that awareness and to help us understand, perhaps at a little more a deep level, why it is our society is feeling the hurt it is in our really messed up relationship with money, seeing money as a goal instead of the tool, seeing money as wealth, like you could eat it, you know, instead of our relationships and our strengths in each other as community members, helping to make a whole, you know, community. Skill banking is another area that I would love to see us move into, at some point in our very near future, because I think as we find the economic crisis is not getting better anytime soon. I can't, right? I mean, we live in an unsustainable system. It's not to be sustained. And guess what? It isn't getting better. It's not planning on getting better. It's not its job to recover, right?
Exactly.
It's really its job to grind us ever more down into pauperism and concentrate that control and wealth. Again, we see an answer to that in Occupy, you know, with the 99%. Meme, looking at it more an egalitarian relationship without having these super fat cats sort of sucking everything up and that ultimate control, which also adds to political control. So as we shift our consciousness, as we realize our real wealth is with each other, and we move away from cash, you know, as many people are being forced to move away from cash now because it doesn't exist, as our previous caller pointed out, for some families. Looking at direct barter, skill banking, neighborhood skill banks, setting up these ideas of, at the very least, we need to localize what tools we have because we have greater impact at the local area. And then to look at maybe new things to consider tools, embiggening the toolbox, as it were. So,
and I want to point out another really lovely resource if you need to be a little bit, you know, pumped up. Back in November, the end of November, there was a panel, and actually Amy Goodman had it on her show, which means it was here on KBOO too, and where she had a panel of Naomi Klein, Michael Moore, William Grider, and go and look at it. It'll pump you up. It's called Occupy Everything. And we're talking here about occupying art, the tool of money, and also not letting them occupy our minds. They're taking our minds. That's why I said these are too foundational in the situation we are in right now, which is one, Michael Moore, I have to say at the end of that, is great, because what he says, well, it's a moment. This is an amazing moment that we all have this chance to make this transformative shift. So we don't sit there. Occupy something. Two people can occupy anything. And as he says, in the United States, in an empire, we go around and occupy whatever we want. And so they've taken that whole idea, and we're occupying for the people, for the goodness. Maybe you're going to occupy your child's school. A lot of people have already been doing that,
yes,
to teach reading, to ask them about kids that are being medicated. And then the situation here where we all have a responsibility because of this is, they call it a democratic moment. And one of the things they also said, and I think this might have been Naomi Klein, ever since the WTO, we have been, so many good people have been doing so many good things.
Do you mean the Seattle WTO?
The WTO, I'm sorry. The WTO demonstrations about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe 12 now. 11. So many people have been coming up with alternatives. At that time, we sort of woke up. Then, because of 9/11, they just sort of put a lid on it. But people, so many good people, were doing so many good things. And now it's their time to shine. And that's why they're calling Jared back to Washington, D.C. to share what's been going on here. And that's why we have all these people showing up at the church to hear about Rethinking Psychiatry.
Awesome.
And speaking of people, we've got a full slate of callers here.
Let's hear them.
Let's hear them. Is Greg still on the line there, Mike? Okay. Greg,
good morning.
Good morning. You hit a lot of topics, but I'll try and be quick, and you can comment.
There's so much to talk about.
Yeah. Let's say that politics boils down to money, and if you can get money out of politics, the whole thing could change a lot quicker, and I'm sure there's the easiest way to enact laws on local levels to change that sort of thing, where you don't have to step right up and, you know.
I don't know. I think it's one of the hardest things on the planet to get money out of politics. And I agree that it's a good idea, but it seems to be incredibly difficult.
Well, you just have to start very small, because that's where it all happens, and not try and challenge the big dogs right away, but just sweep things on a small scale and do city by city, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know. Anyways, I would like to really get back to the psychiatry thing with the kids, and you were saying how there's all this new mental illness that is, or supposedly new mental illness that's happened to our society. I don't know if you're taking into account the fact that this morning on the air they had talked about the toxic emissions and their increases here just in the Northwest, Washington, Oregon, and I think it was Idaho, which was twice as much as, or was more than Washington and Oregon combined, and we're all up like in the teens or 20%, something like that. And so you got all this mercury, lead, and whatever in the air, and I would think, yeah, people would be sick. Maybe the definitions of these sicknesses are wrong, but, people, we're still burning stuff. We're mm-hmm. still emitting a lot of toxics. Our water's not perfectly clean, although we're blessed here in Portland. And on and on and on, our food
source. Well, and look at the food sources. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, food source. So, if I may, just say we clean up our environment, I think it'll help a lot. There's some things that we don't know the cost.
Couldn't hurt.
Wouldn't hurt at all. A big point, like the one you talk about being a mountain to climb, about taking money out of politics, that's a tough one, yes. And the other big hill to climb is that we're finally going to have to stop simply burning stuff, emitting pollution. And burning things is a big problem. And I know you think that it can't be done, but we actually...
No, I'm not saying that. I just said the money in politics, it seems to be an incredibly difficult thing. I didn't say it couldn't be done.
Right.
And in fact, we have every hope that it will be done.
And suggesting these things, like Heinlein said, Robert Heinlein said, being right too soon is socially unacceptable. So if you put out a solution, if you put out a solution too soon, people think you're absolutely wrong or nuts or whatever. So, anyways, have a good morning, you guys.
Thanks a lot, Greg. And let's just move on to LJ, because we've just got so many callers. LJ, I believe, is on the line. Hey, LJ, what's up? or not?
Well, okay. We will we'll get to LJ in just a moment. That does remind me, however, the last thing that, was it Greg that it just left us with?
Yeah.
Is there's a great quote about, goodness, and it's Gandhi. And it's basically, first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they fight you, then you win. That's Gandhi's sort of take on when you come to the truth earlier than the rest of your community is ready for it. You know, and that I find very inspiring. I tend to reflect on that often. And I think it is probably a good thing for us all to sort of think about, especially when we feel like we're in the long slog. And why is it so difficult? It just makes sense. Don't we all want a more humane, compassionate, egalitarian society in which we can thrive? It seems basic. I don't know.
But you know what else?
Look, we've got promos.
We've got promos. Stuff is coming up on.
We've got crab legs.
Yes, we.
Sorry.
You do. Okay, coming up today on KBOO at 9, APA Compass hosts a look at the best of 2011. They'll feature interviews with YouTube phenomenon Jimmy Wong, world champion athlete and Paralympic ambassador Anjali Forber Pratt, and visual artist Sharon Inara. Also, local youth share reflections on Vincent Chin, and the Angry APA Minute series continues with stories by Simon Young, Purvi Shah, and Sharika Mehta. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, commentary, and some snark. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, an interview with a photographer who was brutalized and arrested for taking pictures in front of Oakland City Hall yesterday, Palestinian leader and human rights activist Omar Barghouti talks about Occupy Wall Street, not Palestine, going with our theme here. And noted author and radical social critic Michael Parenti also weighs in on the Occupy movement.
At 11, that'll be good. I haven't heard what Michael has to say.
Yeah, yeah. He's always interesting.
I love him.
I know, me too.
He's like the most curmudgeonly. I've met him. He's curmudgeonly, and I adore him.
And at 11, on It Takes a Village, host Shahid Hamid speaks with Patricia Feathers, founder and executive director of Urban Bridges Studio in Northeast Portland, a nonprofit working to see that every child will have the same opportunity available to them to improve and excel in their lives. How about that, Marsha? And at 11:30, we'll hear Tony Horowitz, author of Midnight Rising, John Brown, and the Raid That Sparked the Civil War, a New York Times notable book of 2011. And thanks, KBOO members, for your support. You helped us exceed our year-end fundraising goals. If you're not a member, it's easy to do. You can still become one. Just go to KBOO.fm and click that little tip jar that says donate now. And it's easy, and you'll feel better for your entire weekend.
Do it now. Avoid the rush.
Yeah.
It is 8:45 in the morning. We are here with Real Wealth Portland. We have Marsha Myers and Jared Gardner talking about two of their exciting projects that are helping us really do the work of transforming society, getting in at the deeper levels and seeing how our relationships with each other are paramount, how what wealth means to us in a community, and how we can work with each other to, well, turn things over. Let's call it. And speaking of calling it,
we've got zillions of them. LJ is back.
Good morning, LJ.
Hey, how are you, Ani?
Doing good.
Happy New Year.
And to you too.
Just a quick shout out and congratulations to the Occupy folks who were Time Magazine's Persons of the Year. Yay!
The protester as Person of the Year, I should have actually bought a copy of that. I should have actually, because, you know, the cover, I should have saved, but
it'll be around.
If anyone has an extra cover, you could just, you know, drop it off. Because I don't think I've actually bought a Time magazine in like 20 years. But I'm thrilled that, and I think it goes perfectly with that quote, first they ignore you, then they ridicule you,
right,
then they stick you on the cover of the magazine and move on.
Yeah, then you make the cover of Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
That was before Gandhi's time, though. So.
Jerry, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Your feelings about establishing a state bank here in Oregon like they have in North Dakota?
Why? Jared, I believe you were just going to get to that.
Great transition. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Thanks, LJ.
Good segue. Good segue.
The Working Families Party has actually pioneered that at the state level in terms of getting the attention of legislators and treasurer to some extent.
Barbara Dudley, right?
Yes, correct. Okay. And so I'm also part of the Coalition Oregonians for a State Bank, and Barbara and others have contributed a ton to that. And structurally, we need something to shift the playing field away from the large Wall Street banks. And one of the earlier callers was talking about how little money there actually is in our pockets, but there are sizable sums in our public institutions. So say the city of Portland has a lot of liquid funds, our counties, cities across the state. And let's not forget about the billions of dollars in the state treasury, the liquid funds. Structurally, it's hard for community banks or credit unions to absorb that money, let alone put it to use without a major shift over long term. So a state bank is the optimal partner for that. So that's definitely something that's on the.
Is there a state that which one of the Dakotas has
North Dakota,
and they seem to fare pretty well economically these days.
Yeah, and one of the main contributors is the resilience of their local financial system. They have three times as many banks as we do, with a whole lot less people, and it's very thriving out there because the state prioritizes partnering with local institutions so that they can thrive. So it keeps money circulating locally.
Okay, now a state bank enhances the ability of small community banks to loan money. Is that the correct?
Absolutely.
All right, and then instead of the money going to Wall Street, it's reinvested in the state, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and just one more question.
This seems like a good idea.
Are the state, does the state and the city use local banks and credit unions to do their business, or do they use the big Wall Street banksters to deposit city and state money?
It's a drop in the bucket in terms of how many dollars public funds are actually deposited in local community banks and credit unions. The majority are in the big banks. And part of it's that it takes a bank of say, Wells Fargo's size to be able to handle the transactions of even the city of Portland, let alone the state. So that's where the kind of the structural component comes in.
Okay, well, thanks a whole lot.
Thanks for those questions, LJ.
keep up the good work. Let us build a community.
All right.
Take care.
And I want to say again, this is going on all over the United States, that different states are thinking, wow, why aren't we doing that? I mean, as Ani just said, this is a no-brainer. And so it is happening, and we're right in the middle of it.
What a cool thing.
Once again,
the middle of, the nexus of change, and really shepherding in, being guardians of that new world that Aaron Dottie Roy talked about, not only existing, coming into being, but we can actually hear it breathing just around the corner.
Speaking of breath. That wasn't a good segment. Never mind. But we have another caller.
But what about my urgent care visit? Wait a minute.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, another caller? Let's go ahead and let them.
Jim. What's up?
Well, first on the state bank, I think that's a great idea. I think North Dakota, I believe, has had one for almost 100 years. It's a great idea for a number of reasons. But I called in more. I was just caught the tail end of the rethinking psychiatry. A couple questions on that. And my understanding from the discussion was that there's apparently a hypothesis that bipolar is a result of treatment for, I think you probably were talking about ADD. Is that the hypothesis?
There are many, as people have said, I mean, what kids eat, the environment as far as the pollution in the environment, there are lots of components. But I was just saying, as far as the studies, one of the things that is just very disturbing is the lack of scientific evidence that shows that what they're doing with any of us with these drugs, I'm talking about the ones where they say you have a broken brain and so they're going to fix it chemically, this has all been built on very shaky, if the ground has been an economic ground. It has not been a scientific ground. That doesn't mean that none of this is true. It mm-hmm. just means not to the extent that we have been led. And the fact that bipolar is on the rise with young people, and that more and more young people are being put on drugs earlier and earlier, you know, there need to be studies done. And that's the problem with this. There haven't been studies. And the ones of you, I just have to say this, because Tom Hartman, if you ever heard him talking about the Santa Clara case and corporate personhood, and how he went and looked at that Santa Clara case and couldn't find a thing about corporate personhood in there, when he was looking, when this country decided that corporations were people, they never did. It was a hoax or a political thing. The same thing happened with Bob Whitaker. He's a medical journalist. He was just looking for the scientific evidence because he knew it was there. He wasn't questioning it, that all of these broken brain theories and chemical imbalance, and that there were drugs and chemical replacements were scientifically based. It's the same story. He started looking for it and he couldn't find it. And that is where we're at. So this is a place where research needs to be done before any children are put on any kind and things that fuss with the chemistry of their brains much and their bodies. I mean, we know if you watch a child, they're growing every second, right? And things are changing. So no, there's no definitive evidence. It's just that there's some things in there that make you wonder.
And it's interesting that we don't want children to drink.
No.
But which also is because kids' brains are growing until they're at least 21.
And actually, this is another thing I've heard, you know, you don't want to have alcohol, you don't want to have marijuana, you don't want these things. They will interfere with the delicate chemistry that is developing in your adolescent brain, where you are changing moment by...
But take
these pills, because the Adderall, the Ritalin, those are different, and I cease to see how.
I'm afraid. I think you said Whitaker.
Robert Whitaker.
Whitaker. Uh-huh. I don't think he looked very far, because I don't know. It was about 15 years ago. There was a pretty good study, and I'm pretty sure there's more studies that have documented the effectiveness of. Treatments for mm-hmm. especially ADD, which is, about a very frequent situation. But so I was glad to hear that I'm afraid I was missing this this bipolar business as coming, as being a definitive study of being done, and apparently that hasn't been done. In my experience, anytime you have a child with a concern about bipolar or even ADD, one of the first questions is, what is the family history? And there's
Are you a medical professional?
Yes, I'm a pediatrician.
Okay, great.
And if I don't get a family history of ADD, it still might be ADD, but I really scratch my head, and certainly with bipolar, mm-hmm. that definitely is genetic. And I'm afraid there, almost certain, and I'd have to go to my files and pull out the articles, but there was one done a while back that really compared just behavioral treatments, the best you could do, against medication treatment and against both and or placebo, and it was found bedrock of treatment for ADD.
And if I could ask you, since we have you on the line, and I love that, what do you think about the fact that as we see such an increase in the drugging of kids and in the diagnosing, I guess really the diagnosing comes first, of kids as ADD, as bipolar, as a number of things that we hadn't seen 20 years ago, 30 years ago, how do you see that actually correlating to the fact that we now have removed arts and music classes, that we have removed physical education, that we don't allow kids to actually do the running around that they used to do in a structured way within schools, that they are larger class sizes with fewer resources at hand? Do you see correlation there at all?
Well, I haven't thought too much about that, but if you have a cause, let's see, what is the cause and effect? It's not, is there a correlation is the question. Just because something happens doesn't mean that something else is happening.
Well, sure. I mean, the geese flying south don't change the seasons.
Exactly. No, no, I think they do need to run around, and I'm not sure I've seen that in our school system. But I just want to just put in my two cents that I see kids that their lives are just turned around, you know, with proper treatment. And there's probably over-treatment, but I just don't want anybody out there to feel bad about getting their children treatment. But it can make
I thank you very much for your call. I'm looking at our time. We have 3 minutes left.
You bet. Thank you very much.
I can't believe this hour's flown.
And Jared had something to say.
Yeah, I was going to jump in and just echo that one of the takeaways I got from Bob Whitaker was that some of these, there are plenty of studies out there, but they have short-term frameworks, and then that's extrapolated to say, oh, well, since we see results in over 3 months with some drugs, let's put kids on them for the rest of their lives. And that's the cautionary tale he's trying to say. And that, like you said, there are multiple ways of treating this. It might be hydration, might be exercise, it might be environmental factors. So looking at more than just the magic bullet and the pill is
holistic approaches.
Yeah.
So again, holistic approach is really sort of the keyword of the
day. That's a good way to wrap up.
And I'm seeing the time and noting that we have to wrap up now. I can't believe this hour has flown. We could go on, and yet we won't, because the APA Compass is about to take to the airwaves.
They've done a lot of work, and they really.
But I want to let us leave with a last word. How do people contact you if people are excited about getting involved and carrying on this work? How do they do that?
It's the Real Wealth of Portland. .org, and also rethinkingpsychiatry.org if you are very interested in that. We have a film festival coming up that starts every Friday, the 20th of January through February, and five different organizations that support mental wellness are presenting films, and there'll be a discussion. This is at the Unitarian Church. I want to put that in. Go to www.rethinkingpsychiatry.org or Real Wealth of Portland, and it'll lead you there. And then what's the one?
OregonBanksLocal.org.
OregonBanksLocal.org.
Thank you so much, Marcia and Jared and Ani.
I'm so glad the show has finally come to pass. As Marcia pointed out, we'd started talking about trying to do this 3 months ago now. Thank you very much for making the time to come in and do this morning.
Thank you.
Bless you.
Take care. Bless y'all.
All right. Are you ready?